The views and opinions expressed in this show do not represent those of Hutton Broadcasting or its employees.
Hello, this is Charlie Romney Brown, your host of KTRC Talk Radio, 1260 AM. We're on every Saturday at 1230 PM. We want to welcome Bill Stewart. Bill has been on several times, and it's always an honor to have him. You may remember, or you may not, that Bill has been bureau chief for Time Magazine in almost every Middle Eastern city, and also the Far East. And he was also in Korea the last days, in Vietnam the last days, with Colby. So he has vast experience, vast knowledge, and we're grateful to have him here. You know, we have been talking about Israel and Palestine for so long, but most people don't know how it all happened and how we got into the situation that we are today. Bill has all of this knowledge, and so we're going to tap into this absolutely amazing intellect and give you some information, which I think you'll find very interesting and will explain a lot of what happens in the current situation. So, Bill, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
It is nice to be back. We're honored. Bill, let's begin with what happened, how this all began with Balfour, the Balfour.
With the Balfour Declaration?
Yes.
Yeah, and the Balfour Declaration was, in effect, a letter from the British Foreign Secretary in 1917 to Lord Rothschild, who was the head of the British Jewish community. And in it, Balfour said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's a pretty close paraphrase, that His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment of a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Mm-hmm. Not a country, but a homeland. And that, there's a distinction there. And as a result of World War I, which the British won amongst the other allies, and the end of the Ottoman Empire, which was really Turkey, but Turkey controlled most of the Middle East up into the Egyptian border. And so the British got, as a mandate, they got Palestine, what became Jordan, it was called Transjordan in those days, Mesopotamia, which became Iraq. The French got Syria, and then they carved Lebanon out of Syria. Now, the British were required by the League of Nations to open up Palestine to Jewish immigration. Jewish immigration had begun in a big way to Palestine, even during the days of the Ottomans, in the late 19th century. And they went in, and the Zionist organization bought up a lot of land. Didn't steal it, bought it. And as a result of that, there was a large influx of European Jews into Arab Palestine in the years before World War I. As a result of the British victory in World War I and the establishment of Palestine as a British mandate, the British were required to let in Jewish immigration. And so the Jewish population of Palestine went from about 10% of the population, or maybe 50,000 people, to about 500,000 in 1936, or about 30% of the population. That was a huge influx, and it caused a lot of discontent amongst the Arab Palestinians. And as a result, there was one British commission, the Peel Commission, which recommended the partition of Palestine into a Jewish homeland and to an Arab homeland. And then World War II came along and interrupted. And the British opened up the British army in the Middle East to the Jews and the Arabs in Palestine. The Jews, by and large, accepted, and they entered the British army. The Arabs, by and large, did not. But the Jewish participation in the British army in the Middle East, it was one of the bedrock foundations of the Israeli Defense Force. They were very well trained. The Arabs could have done the same thing, but they didn't. At the end of the war, the British were basically broke. And both the Arabs and the Jews were carrying out terrorist attacks against the British. The Jewish terrorists blew up, and that's the word to use because that's how we would describe it now. They blew up the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, killing scores of people, mostly British officials. you know, they murdered the British representative, the senior representative in Cairo. Remember, in those days, the British basically ran the Middle East. You know, and Shamir, Yitzhak Shamir, who became prime minister of Israel, you know, was asked on a radio program and asked about the murder of Lord Moyne, and he said, yes, he was part of that. And someone said, oh, but Lord Moyne was anti-Semitic. And Shamir said, well, it didn't matter whether he was or not. We killed him because we had to demonstrate that British power was coming to an end.
Oh, my. Oh, my, Bill. Well, I think it's important for people to realize just what you're saying, that there has been so much conflict in Palestine from the very beginning, and the Arabs weren't happy, you know, with all of the Jews as they came in. So there was conflict all of this time. And most people don't realize that, nor do they realize how many Jews had come in to Palestine, you know, before World War II.
Well, that was the cause of a lot of the Arab unrest. The first Arab uprising, the Intifada, if you will, or the Holy Fighters, as my old Palestinian colleague would say, the Mujahideen, was in 1936. You know, at the end of the war, the British went back to the United Nations and said, we've had it. Yeah, and they turned it over to the UN. They didn't walk out of Palestine, but the UN was given the job of figuring out what to do about the future of Palestine. And the UN came up with a plan which basically gave about 40% of the land of Palestine to the Arabs, although they had 60% of the population, and gave 60% of the land to the Jews, although there were about 40%. The reason was is that the Arabs were getting better land than the Jews were getting. And Jerusalem was to be an international city. It was not to be belong to one side or the other. And the Jews of Palestine were not happy, but they accepted it. The Arabs of Palestine were not happy, and they didn't accept it. Now, that plan is still on the table. One of the main legal reasons why the United States and almost every other major country has never put an embassy in Jerusalem is because under the UN plan, Jerusalem was supposed to be an international city. So the U.S. embassy is in Tel Aviv, as are all major embassies, including the Russian. A few minor ones went to Jerusalem. As a result, the British were supposed to be out of Palestine, British troops, by May 14th, 1948. The moment the last British troops got aboard the ship in Haifa, up in northern Palestine, as it then was, the Jews declared their independence, and immediately war was started, by the Egyptians, by the Syrians, and by the Jordanians, and by the Lebanese, although the Lebanese didn't participate very much. As a result of that war, which really was a war for survival, you had hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees who fled Palestine because they were afraid for their lives. The Israelis say they didn't have to be, but you can't tell that to a Palestinian who fled in 1948. That was the beginning of the refugee crisis, when you had tens of thousands of people in camps in Jordan and Syria and in Lebanon. That's remained the situation to this day. They took their keys with them to their homes because they said they were going back. No Arab ever thought that the Jews would defeat the Arab world, but the Jews did.
Yes.
I'm saying Jews now, not Israelis, because we're talking about a crisis over the formation of the State of Israel.
Right. Something I did not realize, Bill, is that the U.S. declined to take any Jewish immigrants during World War II. And that was part of the creation. And I think Ben-Gurion, wasn't it, who said, you know, if United States had done their part, we wouldn't have had so many people slaughtered in the Holocaust.
Well, there was a famous case of a ship in 1939 that was off the coast of Florida that had thousands, not thousands, but maybe over 1,000 people, Jewish refugees. The U.S. declined to take it, and the Europeans declined to take it. And so the ship had to return to Europe. And then during World War II, you can always say, well, who knew that the Nazis would be so barbaric as to murder 6 million Jews.
That's right.
The Jews said, yes, but they are. We declined. Eventually, intelligence filtered through to showing, in fact, that's what was happening. It's not entirely clear why neither the U.S. nor Britain nor Russia, the Soviet Union in those days, declined really to take action against it, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there was a lot of guilty feelings, you know, on the other side. The State Department in the United States was totally opposed to the creation of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Marshall told Harry Truman, who was president, the creation of Israel will mean only one thing in the Middle East, trouble. You know, and of course, that's exactly what it's turned out to be.
Yes, it has.
Right. And Harry Truman reportedly said to George Marshall, who was the hero,
yes,
and the Secretary of State at that time, how many Arab votes have I got?
Oh, my.
You know, now, you know, that feeds into the myth that somehow American Jews control mm-hmm. elections. They don't. Mm-hmm. In certain cities, that may be true, in New York and others, but American Jews are as divided over Israel as the rest of the country.
That's right.
Is. People have different opinions about mm-hmm. this, but the result was, you know, that Israel, you know, Israel won that war in 1948. Mm-hmm. Didn't win the war legally, but it wound up with more territory than even the UN plan mm-hmm. gave it.
Yes. Well, we are going to hear more from Bill Stewart when we come back. We're going to take a break now. This is Charlie Romney Brown, your host of People, Politics, and Passions, KTRC Talk Radio 1260. Please stay tuned to hear more about Israel.
I'm Joan Cusack, the narrator of Peep in the Big Wide World on public television. I'm also a mom. As parents, we have opportunities every day to explore simple math and science with our kids. Trying things out, exploring, and asking questions together is the best way to help kids develop the skills they need to succeed. Go to peepinthebigwideworld.org, where you'll find lots of fun activities for the whole family.
The views and opinions expressed in this show do not represent those of Hutton Broadcasting or its employees.
Hello, this is Charlie Romney Brown, your host of People, Politics, and Passion, KTRC Talk Radio 1260. We're on every Saturday at 12:30 p.m. And Bill Stewart is still here. We're honored to have him. And Bill writes for the New Mexican, and he also teaches at Renaissance, and he has an extraordinary background with the Middle East. He was bureau chief everywhere he went. And so, Bill, continue on with Israel and its history and the ferment that has always gone
well,
on.
Well, I mean, as a result of the Israeli war for not just independence, but survival. There was a truce in 1949. There's mm-hmm. never been a peace treaty, except with later on with Egypt and Jordan, you know, but not with Syria.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Israel wound up with more territory after the 48-49 mm-hmm. war than it had before.
Mm-hmm.
Things continued that way until the 1956 Suez Crisis, in which Great Britain, France, and Israel conspired together to invade Egypt to regain mm-hmm. control of the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be a disaster for all three. But what's interesting from the point of view of what we're talking about now is that Eisenhower basically told the Israelis to get out, you know, of Sinai, and they did. They listened. You know, they wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. do that now, mm-hmm. but Eisenhower was blunt. Get out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. And the Egyptians got out of Egypt. The next time we had a war was in 1967, the Six-Day War, in which the Israeli armed forces basically destroyed, you know, the military in Egypt and in Syria and in Jordan. Mm-hmm. Jordan had the smallest army, but it may have been the best army amongst the Arabs. Mm-hmm. It was a British-controlled one. It used to be called the Arab Legion. You know, mm-hmm. as a result of that Six-Day War, Israel got control of all the remaining territory of the former Mandate of Palestine, mm-hmm. including what we now call the West Bank. And we call mm-hmm. it the West Bank because it is on the west bank of the Jordan River. Mm-hmm. And it got control of all of Jerusalem, the Holy City included.
Mm-hmm.
Jerusalem is largely a Jewish city, mm-hmm. and it was at the time of the War of 1948, mm-hmm. but not the Holy City, the old city mm-hmm. behind the walls. That is still largely Arab,
mm-hmm.
you know, and very, very sensitive because it has the Dome of the Rock, and mm-hmm. it's one of the three most holy places for the Muslims. That's where things have stood ever since. You had the 1973 Yom Kippur War, mm-hmm. or the Ramadan War, depending mm-hmm. upon how you want to look at that, in which the Egyptians were able to cross the canal, mm-hmm. which no major military expert thought the Egyptians were capable mm-hmm. of, but they did. And the reason why that's important is it allowed Anwar Sadat the prestige to go to Israel and talk about perhaps ending their feud, their war. Mm-hmm. You know, and when Sadat arrived in Israel, the Israeli paper said, Pharaoh comes to Israel.
Oh, my. Know. That was setting him up, wasn't
and then,
it?
then later on, it was Jimmy Carter who brokered mm-hmm. the Camp David peace accords. Mm-hmm. And then you had a peace treaty eventually between Egypt and Israel, one of which Sadat and then later on Mubarak were determined to keep. Mm-hmm. You know, the importance of that for Israel was that Israel is that the Arabs cannot make war against Israel without Egypt. Mm-hmm. Once Egypt is out of the equation, the Arabs can't do very much. You know, that's why Sadat was killed. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a Jewish extremist who killed Yitzhak Rabin later on, both mm-hmm. religious extremists. Mm-hmm. You know, later on, there was a treaty signed with Jordan, not with Syria, because Syria had the Golan Heights, which the Israelis took in the 1967 war mm-hmm. and still have. You know, and then began the whole business of uprisings by the Palestinians, finally the Intifadas, largely inspired by Yasser Arafat, who was mm-hmm. the PLO leader, mm-hmm. who was a brilliant guerrilla leader, but less brilliant as a diplomat.
Yes.
And that's where we stand now. But, mm-hmm. And you have a situation in which the government in Israel is essentially a right-wing government mm-hmm. that in its heart does not want to have a deal with the Palestinians, though they know at some point there's going to have to be one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very hard for anyone to negotiate with Netanyahu, I gather.
Right. Bibi. Bibi Netanyahu.
Bill, could you give us a little background as far as the Jews and looking upon this land as holy and as a gift from God, that they are the special people?
The problem there is that the Muslims think the same thing about themselves. I mean, I used to say sort of jokingly, you can't start this unless you go back to Genesis, and which Sarah and Abraham have a child who becomes the father of the Jews, and Sarah's handmaiden Hagar, bears a child to Abraham, Ishmael, who becomes the father, so it is said, of the modern day Muslims and the Arabs. Now, the reason I think why there's so much passion here is that there are many people who believe that Israel is somehow God's special creation. And even if you're not a Jew, and if you're a Christian, you go to Sunday school and you learn all these stories about the land of Israel mm-hmm. and how many churches are called Mount Zion mm-hmm. and Mount Bethel and other kinds of things that mm-hmm. lead us to think that somehow Israel has a special role to play in the world. Just look at the current campaign. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Mitt Romney today, saying, that how we have to be 100% behind Israel. A lot of that is driven by evangelical fervor to support Israel because Israel is seen to be God's special creation. Mm-hmm. If you believe that, you're in trouble.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the United States has not always been fair with the Palestinians. And I had the opportunity to speak with some Palestinians recently who are still in the refugee camps. How many years?
Oh, people were there for 60 years.
Oh, I know. And, not enough bathrooms, not enough amenities at all. And so that's very, very difficult. So I hope someday people will try and the government will try to be a bit more even in their treatment.
Problem with that, that's a political no-sale with the right wing.
Oh, I know it is. That's right. Exactly. And there are several Jewish groups who, however, are trying to get this over to the United States government. That has to something has to happen, or there will always be, these problems. And
well, the ultimate threat to Israel is not Iran and the atomic bomb. Mm-hmm. The long-lasting ultimate threat for Israel is the failure to have a deal with the Palestinians. As long as there's not a Palestinian state, Israel will never be safe.
No, I understand that. Bill, thank you so much. We're going to have Bill on next week also, And we're going to be talking about some of the other countries in the Middle East. We're going to be talking about Syria, and then we'll go on from there. So please come back next Saturday, and you'll have a chance to learn more. And Bill, thank you so much. I'm so delighted because I've been wanting you to give the history of Israel for an awfully long time.
It's a very brief history, but thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, and I look forward to having you come back. And remember, audience, he's coming back next week. So thank you very much. This is Charlie Romney Brown, your host of KTRC Talk Radio 1260. We're on every Saturday at 12:30. Thank you for listening.